Okay, good morning everyone. Can you hear me okay? Okay. Thank you for being here this morning. I know this is, you know, quite early, especially for folks who are here from the West Coast. My name is Amal Khoury, and I am chair of the Women's Health Committee of the APHA Medical Care Section. On behalf of the section, I welcome you to this session, which is focused on abuse, neglect, and unequal services in women's health. This is a contributed session, so the presentations were selected, you know, from a large group of submitted abstracts, and I thank, you know, the authors for submitting and sharing their work with us this morning. We have four presentations this morning, and I'm going to ask our speakers to please limit, you know, their presentation time to about 15 minutes so we can have questions and discussions at the end of the session. I apologize, I have a sore throat. I don't sound, you know, right this morning. I'm very pleased, you know, to welcome our first speaker. Dr. Steve Borders is Associate Professor of Healthcare Administration at Grand Valley State University in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where he also directs the MHA program. And Dr. Borders will present about prenatal care in the state of Texas.
Thank you. I know that Texas and Michigan are a weird mix, so and it doesn't take long for me to open my mouth and everybody know that I'm not from Michigan. So, but this is the honest to God truth that I've had five separate people ask me if I was Australian in Michigan, if you can believe that. So the last time I said I'm from South Australia. So I grew up in North Carolina and spent about 10 years in Texas. So, but also just wanted to note Rachel, who was a former student of mine, and so just how proud we are of her that she is now in the MPH program at U of M. So, and she helped me a lot with this project here. So, I'm supposed to, this conflict of interest, which has nothing to do with anything I've ever worked on, other than I helped some GIS work for some ambulances. So I'm not sure how deep this conflict of interest thing should go. But at any rate, I was trying to help them think about where to route some, do some of their routing. You know, again, my background is mostly in Medicaid and acute care policy in Texas. And, you know, the birthing outcomes in Texas, too, are just are pretty spooky. At times, you know, infant mortality is not bad. You might be aware of the Hispanic paradox. You know, there's tons of low-income women in Texas, but yet the outcomes are not nearly as bad. So, again, if you go to Detroit or Flint, Michigan, you know, the infant mortality rate is, you know, 12, 18, you know, per thousand. But I think, you know, what's really but most telling in Texas is that the teen pregnancy rate is still really high. And, of course, the thing that I've always been most interested in is this, you know, access to prenatal care. So only about 60% now are receiving, you know, adequate prenatal care as measured by the Kessner Index or the Kottlechuk Index, whichever one you want to look at, or beginning prenatal care within the first trimester. And, of course, Medicaid now pays for over 60% of the births in Texas. So very, very important piece of the access puzzle. So again, as I was thinking, right, even after the passage of the Affordable Care Act, so we know that health insurance does not equal access because, again, all of those women are eligible for Medicaid, but they enroll late, and when they enroll, they have tons of access barriers, providers that won't see them. There's all kinds of things, but what strikes me as really interesting is that we all sort of group everyone together and say, well, this is the real problem. And of course, when you're talking about several hundred thousand births a year that have inadequate prenatal care access and poor outcomes, There has to be some divisions within that group. And what sort of strikes me as interesting too is that in Texas, you know, and this is not a joke, but this is kind of a thing I kind of joke about because my wife works for a home visiting program, or she did in Michigan, called the Michigan Maternal and Infant Health Program, where essentially everyone in Michigan gets case management services. So they kind of treat you're eligible for it, but in Texas you really have to be sort of, you know, 15 and super super high risk to get it. So just by being eligible for Medicaid, you can get these services. So they go out to the home, they check on you to see how you're doing, to see that you have, that you're getting WIC, that you're enrolled in all these things, that your lights are on, and of course, again, you know, the only group that really gets that are the super 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 high risk in Texas. So, and then of course, right, how do we better understand the factors associated with prenatal care access? And again, you know, how critically important Medicaid is. So one of the things that I looked at too, and because everyone in Texas is required to enroll in managed care, I was interested in this area called the Southeast Region of Texas, which was one of the first Medicaid managed care regions in Texas, but it's not a capitated plan where HMOs is what they call the primary care case management model. So it's really a case management fee-for-service model, but there's not a lot of that going on. All of this is going to go away. The whole state is going to go to capitated full risk HMO model for everything. And again, sort of living now in Michigan, the other sort of interesting piece about this is that in Texas, everyone is required to join managed care, and in Michigan, you are not required to join managed care until after delivery. So, again, my data are a little old, but you know how difficult it can be to get data sometimes. So, and if you've ever seen the vital records, you know, there's a lot of interesting information in them, but you know, there's a lot of things that are missing. And I thought, how can I better add some information to this database to put some contextual variables to this? And so I first, you know, looked at all of those that received inadequate prenatal care, and then started thinking, what can I add to this? And so, because I had some address fields, I was able to match sort of their communities. So I looked at the census, the American Community Survey, which is fabulous, fabulous information. Now, it doesn't tell me exactly, you know, the characteristics of the individual women, but it tells me a lot about where they live, what the poverty rate of their neighborhood is, what, you know, how much their the per capita income, you know, what sort of the racial and ethnic makeup of that is. So there's a lot of information about whether, you know, how the employment rate, things like that. And then the other piece that I also added was this from the HRSA, the Geospatial Data Warehouse, which has a lot of information too about medically underserved areas and health professional shortage areas. So again, I was trying to think about where do these women live and what are some of the contextual neighborhood variables that we could also look. So I use the Kastner Index. Again, there's sort of two of those, and I know most people use the Kottlechuk Index today, only that I had spent some time programming the Kastner Index and so did not want to reprogram the Kottlechuk Index. And actually, when I talked to Dr. Kottlechuk one time, he said that as far as inadequate prenatal care, that his measure was essentially the same. His is, you know, has sort of a finer measure after the inadequacy. So what did I do? I looked at the just sort of the rates of women who received inadequate prenatal care, and I found this map just fascinating. And again, if you're looking at that right to the west or to the left there, that's Harris County, that's Houston. And when you look at Chambers County, you know, which was, and I'm sorry, I can't remember, but yeah, between 500 and so the rate per 1,000 women, so nearly 65% of the women in some of those zip codes are receiving inadequate prenatal care. You know, astounding. So you look at Liberty County, and again, these are all within relatively good proximity to Houston, even if you had to go, but you start to see transportation and spatial barriers. Things get a little better. And two, what struck me as really interesting, too, is there are two community health centers here in Chambers County. So it made me wonder, you know, why access was so bad. And then if you go over to Port Arthur, Beaumont, that area, access was not quite as bad. And then, of course, if you go to Hardin County to the north, it's very rural, but access is almost as good as if you had private insurance there. So, but there's some interesting questions there. Why are these so different? So, do you have a question?
Yeah, so Harris County is just adjacent to Liberty and Chambers, you're saying?
Correct.
And then, so what are there hospitals in these areas, Liberty and Chambers, that have poor access? Or you said there's clinics. But
there's clinics.
Like a birthing hospital or a delivery hospital in the vicinity, or do they have to actually go to Harris County?
I imagine that they go to Harris. You could probably deliver in Chambers County, but you know, probably only a level one facility. If you had any sort of, there's sort of a hierarchy of perinatal access, right? And so, obviously, the best ones are in Harris County. So, but that should be irrelevant, right? I mean, because we're talking about prenatal care access, and these aren't really outcomes. These are just the percentage of, these are the rates of women receiving inadequate prenatal care. That's,
you know, there's that correlation between the hospital for delivery and the care facility.
That's really interesting. So I should go back and look in that.
No, I
appreciate that, because those are some of the things that completely confounded me as I was looking at this and saying, wow. I mean, you know, real differences in the rate of women receiving inadequate prenatal care. So that's really interesting. And that may make more sense over in, you know, Orange and Jefferson County, which are bigger areas, but also that Chambers County is really poor. It's kind of that chemical alley, too, along the Houston Shipping Channel. So, at any rate, we can talk more about that. What I did was just cluster analysis. Again, I know a lot of people don't necessarily like this. I love things that people can understand. It's really simple, just the hierarchical cluster analysis. It just makes a lot of sense to me. But as I looked and thought about, dropped my variables into this cluster analysis, and what does it does, right? It just sort of pulls apart these groups and says, what do these particular groups have in common or not in common? And so if we looked at those, and I got this four cluster solution after running this model, time and time again and tweaking it, and this seemed to be the best model. So I come up with this sort of what I called the near rural folks. They're about 10 miles to the nearest FQHC or community health center. They're about half in rural, so they're not the really, really out rural folks, but they're not in the urban centers. So these are mostly white, so they tend to live in these areas where they only have sort of the native English-speaking populations. Of course, then we had sort of these urban poor. These were really concentrated around the fairly qualified health centers, right? Which makes sense, right? So they're close to these areas where they can get care, but for whatever reason, they're not getting good care. They live in these mixed neighborhoods. So there's a lot of those non-English speakers. Again, when I was sort of looking at the American Community Survey, primarily African-American. This group is sort of that Chambers County, those folks that I was looking at. But not always, see, because these also lived 15 miles to the nearest FQHC, mostly. But they're very, very, very poor. So 20% of them without a car, the per capita income of those neighborhoods they were in was less than $12,000 a year. High unemployment. I thought this was fascinating. 50% of the male population not in the workforce. So start looking at those things. So, but they're in what we call these urban areas. They pay too much for rent. Again, mostly African American. I mean, you think these are the hardcore, have everything sort of stacked against these women. And then again, sort of these urban near poor, again, not really out terribly far, but look at the difference in per capita income. So $21,000. You're talking about twice the income in these neighborhoods. They're relatively far away from the FQHC. They're likely to own an automobile, but yet they still receive inadequate prenatal care. Again, not likely to live among non-native English speakers. Rent's more manageable, most likely to be white, also a rather high proportion of Hispanic. So this is where I was just sort of plotting these on the map and looking at my clusters here, too. I know that's a little difficult to see, but that's sort of how it looks here on the map. And those shaded with the hash, so Chambers County is entirely a medically underserved area, which makes good sense. And then Orange County, and I'm sorry those didn't come out all that well, is also a medically underserved and health professional shortage area. So, but what strikes me too is very interesting, right, is that how little the medically underserved and health professional shortage areas really predict. I mean, when you think about how bad some of those outcomes are for the entire area, it doesn't really necessarily equate to the resources and that are most likely to be needed there. So what does this tell us? I think, you know, perhaps it helps us, you know, to prioritize how to reach those most in need, as well as some of those strategies. So if we can think carefully about the types of interventions and support services low-income women are likely to need, we're better able to reach those. We add some richer contextual information in a very low-cost way, and that's sort of been, you know, my big sort of push in a lot of the research that I'm doing. You know, you have people come, and everybody wants to do surveys and focus groups, and you know the sticker shock for any of you guys, you know, to do this type of research. And so to think about where all these data exist and how to do some better analysis. Again, I think what's missing here is that I can't actually tell you that the woman that did not get prenatal care does not own an automobile, but I can tell you a lot about where they live and what the circumstances in which they're most likely to live. Again, I think just that vivid reminder that health insurance doesn't equal access, all right? You know, as we passed the Affordable Care Act, you know, we all patted ourselves on the back and went, hey, problem solved, right? And of course, yeah, you know, anything but problem solved. You know, and imagine what it's going to be like when all of these, you know, adult population, it'll be really interesting, you know, to see those that are too, you know, that don't have dependents or the parents of these low-income children, as they become eligible for Medicaid, all of the things that they're likely to need. I think that's going to be really interesting as we start to think about, you know, what are the things that they're going to need and how we reach out to them. So there's my contact information. As I said, Rachel and I are finishing up a paper on this, so shortly, which we hope to submit somewhere. And if you have any questions or would like to see a working copy of it too, I'm happy to share that with you. So, thank you.